The content of this podcast should not be considered financial or investment advice. All interviews and discussions are opinions only, and the podcast has been created without taking into consideration the listener's financial objectives, financial situation, or needs. Listeners should obtain independent advice before making any financial decisions.
Hi, this is Barry Fitzgerald, Garen Perro columnist for StockEd. Welcome to another edition of the Explorers Podcast. We're off to sunny California today, where we have Dateline Resources working away at their well-known Coliseum Gold Project and a emerging rare earths story, second leg if you like. Now, the stock is trading under the code DTR. Last sale was at 1.2 cents, giving the company a market cap of around $18 million undiluted. Now, the company has recently reported some exciting high-grade gold exploration hits, and the rare earth story is fast evolving too by the looks of it. Now, to bring us up to speed on all that, we have the Managing Director, Stephen Baghdati, with us today. G'day, Stephen. Welcome to the podcast.
G'day, Barry. How are you doing?
Good. Stephen, we did have a chat, must have been a couple of years ago, and things have been progressing nicely, I see. Let's start with the Coliseum Gold Project. I see in July last, in 22, I think it was, you put a resource out, 813,000 ounces. So what's the story at Coliseum?
Well, Barry, you may remember that when we first acquired the Coliseum from Barrick, at that point in time, they were not aware that they had 141 boxes of data. After we did the deal, they found the data. So we took our time and went through that data, reconstructed all the drill hole database in 3D, and then went out and did some verification drilling in 2022. Certainly the drill holes that we put down did verify the historical data, and we were able to get the confidence to put out a JORC resource of 813,000 ounces at 1.2 grams per ton, which is consistent with the historical resource and the data that BP had put out.
That's a lot of gold for a company with a market cap of $18 million. What's going on there? The market hasn't bought into the story yet?
Not entirely sure, Barry. I mean, The market's tough at the moment. We are doing the best we can, and we are minimizing our expenses where possible. The JORC results that we've been getting are very exciting, and in any other market would probably be company makers. We will just continue plugging away, and the market appreciation will come.
And in that regard, the story's just got a lot better there, because you've just recently reported some very high-grade hits, 88 metres at 4.18 grams a tonne in a diamond drill hole, which included 22.8 metres at 8.17 grams a tonne gold. That's very high-grade hits, and I understand it's led to a bit of a rethink on just what the resource model at Coliseum should look like going forward.
Definitely. So historically, and certainly our perception and understanding up until recently has been that the high grade is contained within a small section of this pipe. Now, we've struck high grade in what's called the felsite pressure unit, which is 70% of the overall material there. So it's 2.3 times more than the sedimentary pressure. And we're keen to explore that further to determine the extent of it, how much of it is high grade, is it consistent the whole way through? And then once we've worked some of those questions out, got answers to them, we will look at sort of upgrading the resource estimate, once we've got the full picture. We're a little bit loath to do so beforehand because we could be selling ourselves a bit short.
So just to be sure, that high-grade hit I rattled off there before, that sits outside what you normally target there, being the high-grade sedimentary breccia unit. So this is in this felsite breccia unit. Is that right?
Not all of it. Certainly the upper portion of it and some parts down towards the end are, which tells us that we're going through the sedimentary breccia unit, and the surrounding rock around the sedimentary breccia unit also has high grade. So you're going through both felsite and sedimentary in that hole. and you're getting high grade in the fell site as well.
So I guess the immediate focus then will be on drilling.
Definitely. So at the moment we have an RC rig out there that's drilling, and we have a core rig that's out there that's drilling. We have some, you know, holes in the lab waiting for results. We're looking to expand the drilling because you may remember that we have two Brescia pipes. There's the north pipe and the south pipe. And the focus so far has been at the south pipe. And we've now turned one of the RC rig around to start drilling towards the north pipe to see whether this fell site unit does sort of link up with the north pipe. And we're not sure that we'll get it the first or second hit, but we've started the process. And that's where the focus is.
It looks like plenty of upside at Colosseum.
Yeah, in our opinion, definitely.
All right. And not to put rush you along too much, but when might investors see the first sort of results flowing through from the current drilling program?
Well, they're ongoing. You know, we're using two labs up there. The RC data is going off to Paragon, and the core data is going off to ALS. So they typically, you know, Paragon is a little bit faster, 3 to 4 weeks, and ALS is anything from 5 to 7 weeks.
Now, just to give investors a feel for, I've mentioned it was in California, but East Bernardino County. What's the infrastructure like in that part of the world?
You know, we're a few kilometres away from one of the USA's largest solar farms. You know, Interstate 15, which is a big one that goes east-west there, is where you turn off to go up to the mine. It's only a 6 kilometre drive up a dirt road, and you're at the mine site. You know, the infrastructure is what you would expect to see in Nevada, because it is close to the Nevada border. You know, water, power, etc., have all... a known quantity, because the mine was in production. I don't know whether we've covered that last time, but I think we may have. The mine was in production, so we already know where the power comes from, where the water comes from, where the tails go to, you know, where the low grade stockpiles are, where the waste get dumped. All of that stuff has already worked out and approved, and it's all in a sort of 240 page plan of operation with an environmental impact study that's completed on it. So in terms of flicking the switch and getting going again, clearly the mine ceased operating in 1994. So a lot of that infrastructure will have to be put back up there, but it's a known quantity in terms of where it comes from and how to get it there.
Not sure of the actual figure off the top of my head, but I think 1994, we probably had $500, maybe $600 US dollar gold prices. Now we've got record prices. It's a very different proposition opening up.
Definitely. Yeah, and you know, you may remember back then the central banks decided that they did not want to know about gold.
So even our own.
That's right. And I think the trough, whilst the trough wasn't in 1994, it wasn't long after, and I think it might have hit 280 at one point.
Yeah, it got very low.
And 1994 would have been, you know, it fluctuated probably between 300 and 400 during 1994. So it would have been hard work. And, you know, once Barrick, see, the background to this mine is that it was drilled out by BP. It didn't meet their internal investment hurdles. You know, it was a sub 1 million ounce in reserve. So they sold it off, and Alan Bond actually ends up buying it in Bond International Gold. And he gets it into production. We all know how things worked out for Bond International Gold. And LAC ended up owning the mine, LAC Minerals. And LAC Minerals then was taken over by Barrick. So by the time Barrick have taken over the mine, this is way too small a project. And although it was still making money, it wasn't worth the effort. It wasn't making the kind of money that would warrant, you know, ongoing sort of performance and monitoring and managing of a mine. So Barrick suspended the operations in 1994.
Not big enough for them, because they, of course, are sort of tier one operators. They like 500,000 ounce a year type gold mines, which is all well and good.
Definitely.
But, your market cap is 18 million, and I think theirs is probably 30 or 40 billion at the moment. So
well, we're on our way, Barry.
That's right. We've got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
Now, we've talked a bit about the location, and of course, 10 Ks away, you have MP Materials, a US $2.85 billion company, best known for being the world's only integrated, on-site, mining and separation rare earths operation, one that's obviously receiving a lot of help and interest from the US government, which wants to reduce America's reliance on Chinese supplies of the key rare earth magnet materials. Now you're 10 Ks away, and I see that you've been building a rare earth story into the company. And most recently, you had the geological survey, the US Geological Survey, come in and conduct some work that confirmed that through the zircon aging analysis that Coliseum has the same sort of rocks as Mountain Pass, which is the MP Material mine.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, the having MP Materials down the road from us, when we first started looking at Coliseum, we saw that as a potentially the geology looked similar, and it was worth a look at the rare earth back in 2021. Now, the United States Geological Survey is a... is part of the Department of the Interior, and the USGS, the Geological Survey, has an annual budget of about $3 billion to go out and do work all over the country and all over the world, in fact. They had flown a radiometric survey over the area, and they had published it in, I want to say, maybe December 2019, so just before COVID. Mm-hmm. And it was almost, I'm sure actually, the world missed it because of COVID. No one was paying attention. So when we started looking at the area in beginning of 2021, and we came across the USGS data, which showed a coincident, you know, uranium, thorium, and potassium signature trending northwest, coming straight out of Mountain Pass, going to the Coliseum. That's what got us really excited about the potential for rare earths. And of course, since then, we've done a lot of work, and we've engaged some of the world's leading rare earth experts. And the USGS has become interested in the project, hence they went out and did the age dating on the rocks. But we've also done our own work, and you know, we've done the sampling of the outcrops where we've got, you know, reasonably good grade in indicator rocks, actually very high grade in indicator rocks. And then we've also got, we've also done a gravity survey, and the gravity anomaly is roughly 3 kilometers by about, on strike by about 500 meters wide. So we believe that within these gravity highs, there is a real possibility for having a rare earth bearing structure there.
And, Mountain Pass, of course, distinguishes itself for having, I think, their grade is about 6%, so super high grades, which has obviously underpinned the operation in the past. And they're actually building a magnet-making plant down in Fort Worth, Texas. So very much at the vanguard of the US's pushback against rare earth supplies from China. So your next step on the rare earth side of things, what will that entail?
Well, you know, we've always viewed that the logical thing to do, and we've started discussions, we've had preliminary discussions, but nothing formalized yet. But we've always thought that it wouldn't make sense for Coliseum to build the infrastructure that Mountain Pass has. Mm. We are aware that Mountain Pass do blend their high grade and their low grade together to get to that head grade of about 6%. Our perspective will be to explore for the rare earth bearing ore body, determine where the high grade is, determine if it's feasible to mine that from underground and ship high grade material down the road.
Yeah.
You know, if we're able to ship 500 tons or 1,000 tons a day down the road, and it's high grade, and they no longer have to blend low grade with their material, you know, we could see a doubling of their bottom line production, you know, literally overnight. And we would be able to get to that position of being able, if, you know, on the assumption the exploration and so on is successful and the feasibility is there, we would be able to get to that point faster than most people. and we wouldn't have to compete for human resources, because I don't know whether you've ever been to a rare earth processing facility, but when I toured the Mount Pass facility, I've done it twice, both times I walked away thinking this is a multi-billion dollar exercise, and it is more akin to a chemical engineering facility than it is to a mining and processing facility. And it's highly complex, and it's not for the faint-hearted. And I would rather just ship ore down the road and get them to do it. So the point of that is, you don't have a lot of, well, we in the West don't have a booming rare earth industry. So we don't have universities churning out graduates that are taught how to process and separate rare earths. So competition for personnel is intense. Being up the road from Mount Pass, we don't have to compete with them, or anybody else for that matter, for personnel. Then, of course, the technology, the infrastructure, all that know-how, we don't have to go through all of that. We just truck it down the road, or even slurry it down the road to Mountain Pass. And that's always been the long-term objective here with the rare earth component of this project.
I've touched on the US government's support through its very various agencies about this real push they have to encourage domestic rare earth production and magnets. I'm just wondering, it's early days, but is it the sort of thing that you might be able to pick up some US government support for in terms of working up a deposit?
We're certainly in communication with them. And there are several different programs up there. So, you've got the industrial-based policy, that's the defense industrial-based policies, and they've got defense DPA Title III programs. They've also got DLA programs. That's the Defense Logistics Agency. Then you go to the Department of Energy, and they've got their own grant loan programs. And rare earth definitely is a constant theme. So they will call for funding, sort of grant applications. And from time to time, they might say, cobalt or lithium or graphite. And there's a window. You've got to apply within that window. Whereas rare earth seems to be a continuous window, because I was told that the heavy rare earth production from Mountain Pass will meet about 5% of America's needs. And then if you throw Lynas in at full throttle, that might meet another 5%. And there is something up in Wyoming, I think, where it's an old coal thing. They're talking about bringing that online, and that might meet another 3 or 4%. So there is a massive deficit here. And the USA, it's no secret that the USA doesn't feel comfortable having that deficit anymore. And they are doing all they can to accelerate, shrinking that deficit.
Yeah, it's an interesting backdrop you paint there. And of course, I should mention, readers of the newspapers this week will see that Gina Rinehart, Australia's richest person, has bought a 5.3% stake in MP Materials, the owner of Mountain Pass. And MP Materials and our own Lynas Corp have talked about a potential merger in the past, but nothing is underway at the moment. So, yeah, the pot's stirring in that whole rare earth space.
Definitely. Gina's known for being an opportunist. So, luck to us.
She also has, at last reports, $20 million in cash and near-term cash to at her disposal. So,
did you say million or billion?
Billion.
Right.
Yeah. She can pretty much buy anything she wants.
Good.
All right. Now, one of the things that's always fascinated me about Dateline is, junior explorer, albeit you've got a sizable gold resource under your belt now, and this potentially very exciting rare earths project advancing, is the board. It's very heavyweight. You've got some big names there.
Yeah, I've been really lucky. Mark Johnson, ex-managing director of Macquarie Bank, we get along. Tony Ferguson, ex-head of Macquarie Resources, and he used to be managing director of Rothschild Australia. So they bring a lot of compliance and just guidance and so on to the board, and provide both financial and financial support and lots of obviously depth of experience and network. And then you got Greg Hall, who was the at one point I think the chief geologist at Placer Dome before it got taken over by Barrick for $10 billion back when the gold price was only $500 or $600. and of course, Bill Lannan, a mining engineer who, was one of the founders of Mancala Mining, a contract miner, and still very much involved in the mining industry, actively involved today. So we've got an engineer, geologist, a couple of bankers, and myself who runs around, and I get the compliance stuff done. I get the team done, put together, and then we go off and create value.
We mentioned the chairman there, Mark Johnson, ex Macquarie. He likes the story so much. He's got 20.1%. We don't normally see that in junior companies or any companies for that matter. So he obviously likes the story.
He does. He does. He's been supportive the whole way through, and continues to contribute to capital raises and rights issues, and so on. And he's, I talk to him almost on a daily basis.
All right, Stephen, let's bring it all together and give investors a feel for what sort of re-rating milestones you see ahead of the company, say in the next 12 months or so, that will get this market cap moving to better reflect the underlying value of the assets.
Well, we're focused on the gold at the moment. Mm-hmm. We're also talking to the government up in the US about funding for the rare earths. We intend to update the mineral resource, and probably with that come forward with a plan in terms of how we're going to monetize this resource. And as far as the government funding goes, what we have been told is that you simply, when you're talking to the federal agencies over there, they want to know that you're adequately funded all the way through to bankable feasibility study. Now, there's no guarantees it'll come through, but I think if it does come through, that could be a massive rebate.
Okay, very interesting story. Stephen, thanks for your time today. Much appreciated. We'll be watching with interest.
Thank you, Barry.
Cheers.